Welcome to Grounded Wellness. I'm your host, Bethany McDaniel, founder of Primally Pure, mom of three, and biohacking enthusiast. We created this podcast to bring you practical advice to live a more vibrant and intentional life rooted in long-lasting health. We record right here on our regenerative farm, grounded with our feet in the soil, exploring bold truths, overlooked wisdom, and holistic tools that support true well-being. These conversations will challenge everything you know about health and wellness.
This is a special audio-only episode with Amos Miller, an Amish raw milk farmer from Pennsylvania, where my family buys a lot of raw dairy products from. To be respectful of Amos's religious beliefs, we did not capture any video footage of the interview. However, I'm so grateful for this rare opportunity to talk to Amos. We talked about what it's like to be Amish, raising children in the Amish community, whether or not they vaccinate, what they eat, what they do when they get sick, why the government is trying so hard to stop Amos Miller from selling raw milk, and so much more. I think you guys are going to find this conversation really fascinating. Let's dig in. Amos Miller, welcome to the Grounded Wellness Podcast. I'm so excited for this conversation. You have been traveling the country for the last couple of days, meeting up with customers of your farm. How has the trip been so far?
It was very exciting. It puts you out of the comfort zone, but that's not a bad thing. You get to see other parts of God's creation, meet new people, and it's very interesting to see out on the road how what I've seen is people look out for each other, and I'm amazed of how I've never seen so many cars in my life. And I'm wondering where are all these people going? I guess they have a mission, but what amazes me is everybody, as far as I see, wants to respect each other and do its thing. So I'm grateful for what we have in our country.
Wow, that's amazing. And I wonder if you'll still feel that way after you go to LA tomorrow. We'll see.
Well, the interesting thing is that we seem to like traveling during the night. My driver, likes to drive in the night. And I'm thinking I like that myself because it's
more peaceful.
And I like that idea. But then you get to miss the countryside, the scenery, but we get to see some of that during the day, of course. So.
Do you sleep in the car while he drives?
I do, yeah. Yeah, that's my time to snooze away.
And is this your first time venturing outside of Pennsylvania?
No, it's my second time in the West Coast. Okay. I've been here 10 or 15 years ago in this area, attending the Weston A. Price Conference. And also meeting my members down in L.A., Los Angeles. But that time I traveled by train, which was very interesting. But this time we came down 75% of the way. We came down with a bus, and then we got off and then we're driving elsewhere in the meantime. And liking that. But the bus was very nice and smooth. I like that.
Was it, how big was the bus?
It was what we call a 58-passenger bus. But the interesting, this bus company travels back and forth about every 2 to 3 weeks. And so they put half of the buses in bunk rooms so you can stretch out. That was very interesting.
Okay, so you weren't like crammed into a little seat with other people.
That's right.
You had some space.
That's right, yeah.
Did you do a Rumspringer when you were younger?
They call it a Rumspringer.
Okay, Rumspringer.
Yes, we did. Yes, did. I did.
And for anyone who isn't familiar with that term, can you explain what that means?
It's basically just the youth group gathering together, boys and girls coming together at the age of 16, just singing German courses. And that's a good way to find a partner. And that's kind of the purpose of the youth group.
To find a spouse.
Yes, that's right. A spouse, that's right. And at the same time, you have to... You got to teach the children when they're young to serve God, and hopefully that can help them. The seed can sow in their hearts where they can. Their goal is to serve God, but of course there's an evil spirit that wants to take over, And usually when the 16-year-olds is when they start what they call the youth group. Another term is Rumspringer. And hopefully the parents can learn and trust, and hopefully they're good seed that they try to sow. To each individual have to decide which spirit, God, as their servant, and just the parents have to pray, and they get to make their own choices at that time.
Yeah, it sounds actually like a really beautiful process of discovering and of the faith that you were raised in, kind of becoming your own and adopting that rather than it just being something that is your parents' faith and something that you were raised in. It seems like a really neat opportunity to really figure out for yourself, like you said, who you want to serve, what master you want to serve.
Right.
God or the world. And I think that's very different than how it's portrayed in the media sometimes. It kind of, it's portrayed as this wild free-for-all sort of a thing. But is there any truth to that side of it?
Each individual has to decide for its own, well, at one point in time, which spirit they want to serve. God as their master, or go down the other route, which of course our prayer is that nobody has to experience that, but maybe some have to in order to get the grasp of the Holy Spirit that this is not the path I want to go down. So, yes, it's a very fragile time for a youth, a livelihood.
Yeah. And do most people end up leaning into their faith more and staying within the Amish community? Or would you say, do a lot of people end up leaving the Amish community during that time?
Well, that brings us back to where we may have not touched that on this conversation yet, but that was one of the reasons that our grandfathers took the stand of not sending their children past the eighth grade, because they saw what was happening, that they were getting into these public schools, maybe making wrong decisions. And that was probably one of the main things that our grandfathers took the stand of not going past the eighth grade. They want them private and to keep them more under their own protection umbrella, and have them back on the farm, working with God's creation, so they can be connected to the soil and hopefully not be poor examples that can go out there.
Yeah. I think a lot of non-Amish people even can relate to that now.
There's yes, indeed.
A lot of parents who are really concerned about the public school system and what the kids are being taught in public school. And before we started recording, you were mentioning that the bit about the eighth grade and how the government came in and was starting to say that the Amish children needed to go to school past the eighth grade. And the Amish aren't typically involved in politics, as I understand it, but they did take a stand at that point. And they said, no, we firmly believe that our children should be contributing to the household, working in the fields, and not in the public school system.
That's correct, yes.
So when you were on Rumspringer, I'm trying to say it correctly, you met your wife at that point. And how long have you been married now?
We have been married since 1998.
Wow. And you have 8 children.
Yes.
4 boys, 4 girls.
That's correct.
What is the average amount of children that Amish parents have?
I think I hit the average.
You're right on the nose.
Yeah, I think so.
That's, I mean, in our society, that is considered a lot of kids. And I think a lot of parents might even be overwhelmed by the idea, just the thought of having that many kids. But I know it looks a lot different in the Amish community. How do you think that the Amish community views parenting and children differently than the rest of society?
Interesting. Well, one thing is that the being connected to the land, working with God's creation, fulfilling His plan. I think God's plan is to fill the earth, take care of His creation. With that goes raising a family and learning them how to be good farmers. So yeah, lots of things that go into there.
How old were your children when they started contributing to the household and working on the farm?
Interesting. Probably 1 year old.
1 year old? How is that?
No, that's stretched. Maybe giving the kittens a little bit of milk that we just got from milking the cows.
Wow.
Probably around 5 years old is when they get the responsibility of taking care of the calves, maybe giving them some milk. That's probably the first responsibility that they get to have on the farm, feeding the baby calves.
At five.
Yeah, and then they're from there on out, they get more and more responsibility.
Yeah.
First, they really like it, and then a year or so later, why did I ever want to do this? But if you grow old like I am now, you get to think back, those were the days. So working hard can be difficult at the time, but it can be a blessing as you grow older. What work is a real blessing.
It's a big contrast from how most modern families operate, where I think the parents can feel really overwhelmed because the kids aren't contributing in the household as much, and there isn't as much responsibility given to the children. And so everything kind of falls on the parents, not in every household, but I think in a lot of households, it seems that way. And so the idea of having more than two, three kids, I think to a lot of families seems really overwhelming, but the Amish are able to do this because the children are contributing from such a young age, and it's just kind of woven into your culture.
That's right. And our forefathers saw the value of having children occupied, having them activity, doing things that are important. My grandfather saw it when he took the stand for not sending his children past the eighth grade. And that's my goal, is to, how can we keep the families on the farm? The way the things have been going the last 10 years is very sad. There have been many farms in our area that have actually gone out of business. We had 30 to 40 cow family farms with milking cows in our area all across Lancaster County. And that has dwindled down probably 75% the past 10, 15, 20 years. And it's because they were selling milk to the big co-op milk companies. For some reason, the milk companies didn't seem, it was so competitive or something, that they didn't seem to raise the prices for the milk or whatever. So the farmers almost had to go out of business. Mm. So the reason I'm getting into here now is that why we do what we do is because the importance of having children on the farm. And the Westonleigh Price Conference has created a education. They started back in 2000. The importance of having nutrient-dense foods fed to our families. And my father took that to heart, and he got to work and started making raw butter, raw cream. And of course, what Westonleigh Price Foundation was promoting is what we wanted to make available for our customers. So, and they wanted it raw. And the past 10 or 15 years, or maybe even more, raw milk was being discouraged by the government, very likely because it could have been sold out by the big corporations, educating the government, maybe even putting staff in there to lead things towards their direction. That's just an assumption that I'm making. The truth cannot stay hidden. The truth will rise to the top. And God was good enough to have someone out there educating how raw milk, raw cream can be important to one's health, especially with cows out on grass. So through all that, things are now turning around where there's more and more farms coming back. And this is like 20, 30 cow farms coming back in our area. And I'm very encouraged by how things are going. That's why I'm traveling to the West Coast, is to meet some of my customers. We like what we do, and they like the quality of the product, and therefore the customers are willing to pay a premium, and therefore we can sustain our farms financially a lot better. And I'm very excited and grateful for the opportunity to keep our families on the farm.
Have you seen a surge in raw milk sales recently? Because raw milk is something that a lot of people are interested in now and wanting for themselves and their families. How are you finding that also, that you've gotten more interest in the last few years in your raw milk products?
Yes, it's very interesting. The demand has grown dramatically. Two things that come to my mind that may have occurred. That one is there's more and more people dealing with health issues, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, you name it. And the question I had for the government when they were trying to give us a hard time for doing what we're doing is I asked them, why, if they're doing the right thing with pasteurized milk, why is health issues continuing to rise in our country? Well, they didn't really know what to say. So it brought us back to where we believe that being connected with God's creation, less process, artificial preservatives have to come out if we want to sustain health. I don't want to condemn the government too hard because we need government. But the problem was, it seems if it was there was too much corporation involved. Therefore, they were trying to discourage the raw milk. And what happened is the truth cannot stay hidden. So what was happening, the government was trying to make raw milk look bad. And it seems the more they tried to discourage raw milk, the more the moms wanted to feed their children good nutrition food. And then they came forward. Getting between a mama and her child is like getting in between her grizzly bear and her cub. So when they could not get the raw milk that they needed, they were being educated. They knew the benefits of it, and they want to look out for the health of their child. So then they came forward and said no to the government as well. And there was farmers that were looking to keep their families on the farm. And it seems the government, the more the government tried to intervene, it just seemed to get more publicity out there than ever before. So the more they intervened, they found out over the years that the more publicity the raw milk got. So now it's basically just kind of at a standstill. I feel grateful for, if I may say this, Robert Kennedy Jr. is looking out for the little children as well, trying to build a foundation where they don't have to be vaccinated, in my opinion. I feel grateful that we have this chance to put our children back on the farms again. We'll see what happens, but I'm blessed and that we can have this opportunity.
Oh my goodness, there's so many things that you just said that I want to touch on. Let's just real quick, for anyone who maybe is interested in raw milk, but still a little hesitant about it, what would you say to them about the benefits of raw milk and why it is a very safe food when properly raised and produced?
Raw milk is raw milk, and it all comes back to what the animals are fed. Raw milk can be dangerous. If the animals were on a diet that was not what God intended it to be, the problem raw milk can have, if the animal was confined, fed lots of corn and soy, did not have access to outdoors, the fresh air, the sunshine, and you drink raw milk from those, it's basically the immunity of the cow goes down because it's in a stressed environment. And if you drink raw milk from that, the milk will not have the nutrients as a cow that has a good green grass, sunshine, fresh air. The soil is well maintained. The cow don't have access to those options. There's more chance of bad bacteria coming into there. There's bacteria everywhere. Bad bacteria will be here, will be there. Good bacteria will be here and will be there. So they all come together. And the one that has the best environment is going to multiply. So the bad bacteria gets in the raw milk that does not have much good bacteria. The animals were on a bad, not in a good environment. The bad bacteria will take over, and whatever is in that milk we consume, it'll just multiply again. So it's the same as a good bacteria. So the animals were in a good environment, good soil. We take care of God's creation. He will take care of us. So we have to be educated of what is God's plan. What is His creation? We want to make this planet a better place than when we came. So we need God's guidance on this, meditation, and just seek His will. Blessed to have a father that was open-minded, and the Weston A. Price Conference and many other organizations came out and wanted grass-fed. They actually taught. It was amazing. This Sally Fallon, which lived in D.C., is basically, she came out to our area in 2000 and told us farmers how our great-grandfathers used to farm.
Because had that process been kind of forgotten at one point?
It has been, yes.
Even in the Amish community?
Yes, to a certain degree. The reason is the price of milk was coming down, yet everything else was going up. So the farmers have to look. The milk companies were not necessarily looking for nutrient density. They were looking for butter fat and so forth. So it wasn't being monitored how much nutrition was in the milk. So the farmers were basically, the more milk I can make, the more I can make my payments. So it was kind of like a rat race. Even we were making corn and trying to get lots of volume out of the cows. So we were kind of going down the wrong road. But we're grateful that the consumers have woken up and asked the farmer if they can produce this food through the education of the Weston A. Price Foundation, and they're willing to pay a premium. And therefore, we have a great relationship in our country again.
So the Weston A. Price Foundation really came in and re-educated the Amish community on how to get back to their roots of producing raw milk, which before pasteurization, raw milk was just milk. I think people get so worked up about the idea of raw milk, but really this is a food that has always existed and that people have always consumed with no issues. And the problems really begin, like you mentioned, when the cows are not fed the right diet or maybe raised in unsanitary conditions. But I have to say, my family and I have been drinking your raw milk for sure over a year, maybe the last year or two, and we've been sick so much less. I mean, nothing really fazes us anymore. Like my kids for a while were getting these, you know, just colds and flus kind of like every couple of months, it seemed. And since we've implemented raw milk in our diets, that has not happened. They'll maybe get sniffles a little bit or kind of be a little bit lethargic, and then it kind of goes away really quickly. But we have not been hit with the same sicknesses that we used to be hit with. And that's got to be from all the beneficial bacteria in the raw milk, right?
Yes, indeed.
I want to mention some of your other products too, because you have so many amazing products that are made from raw dairy other than just the milk. You guys have raw cheese that's delicious, raw butter, the ice cream is unbelievable. The chocolate and the vanilla are my favorite, and that's like my treat. That's kind of my go-to dessert these days, is just a couple small scoops of the vanilla mixed with the chocolate, and it's so good. And then the kefir. Do you say kefir or kefir?
Three ways you can call it.
Okay, what's the correct way?
Kefir is what our way would be, yeah.
Okay.
Kefir, kefir, or kefir.
Okay.
I usually call it kefir.
Yeah, I switch back and forth between kefir and kefir, and I never know what the correct way to say it is. But, okay, your strong kefir is so, like, pungent and so good. It's, like, sour in a way, but not in a bad way. Like, it's supposed to be really kind of have that sour zip to it, right?
Feel the energy, possibly.
Yeah. And then the fermented foods. I love your fermented foods. Can you talk a little bit about the benefits of fermented vegetables?
Well, I'm a farmer, but we do make some fermented vegetables. Sauerkraut is probably one of the healthiest vegetables that you can eat. It even talks in the Bible about, I wish I could quote the scripture where it is, but where if you are ill or sick, eat cabbage. It's amazing how the Weston A. Price Conference is promoting cabbage, and they recommend it at every meal. But yeah, we do get fresh vegetables from different farms in our area. We chop them up. We make kimchi. We make fermented red beets, onions and carrots. So it's basically the fermented vegetables. There's some of them contain whey, and whey always has the friendly bacteria. So the more friendly bacteria you can get in your gut, then you're heading the right direction for having less illnesses. I'm not a doctor either, but to my knowledge, all illnesses start in the gut. Feed your gut, and then that tells the rest of the body what it is. So
absolutely,
that's why it's so important to feed your gut with good bacteria, good nutrition. The thing that has happened over the years is the big corporations, there used to be, when they did raw milk years ago, they usually, the farmer came out like I'm not sure, every day or every other day. Whatever milk didn't get sold went back to the farm for further processing, or maybe the pigs had a dessert or something. But what has happened over the years, the corporations look to get away from these costs. So they found out, of course, maybe pasteurizing or homogenizing the milk would preserve the milk where they can keep it on there. So it lowers their cost of going back to the store and taking it back home and all that. So they found a way of preserving it. But the problem about highly preserved foods is that when you consume those, how can the body break it down if it's preserved?
It's dead, right?
Well, you can call it dead. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's lacking the bacteria that actually helps you to digest it and assimilate it in the body.
That's right. So these organs in the body are looking for nutrition, but if the food is so highly preserved, how can it be nourished? So it comes down to nourishing the body with good nutrient-dense foods, life-giving. And one thing that I want to mention on is that when our forefathers butchered animals on the farm, the old saying goes they ate everything except the squeal, and which is probably almost right.
What does that mean?
The squeal, the oink.
Okay.
They could not eat that. But they almost, they ate the intestines, the organs, the brains, not just, those were almost any animal. And there's a reason behind that. Of course, because they want to be, they don't want to be wasteful with anything. So they consume, they had hard times. And, but the other reason behind that is you need all the organs you can get to nourish your own organs.
Do you eat animal organs?
I do.
What are your favorites?
I love liver.
What kind of liver? Chicken, beef?
Chicken is the mildest.
Yeah, I agree.
But sauteed in onions is good. Not necessarily that I really like it, but I know it's how healthful it can be.
I should have brought you a liver smoothie today. Normally for podcast guests, I'll make a liver smoothie, and it's actually made with raw chicken liver. How do you feel about raw liver?
The fresher, the better.
Yeah. Super bioavailable.
Yes.
So I'll mix raw chicken liver with berries and honey and your raw milk and a little bit of mint leaves.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, man, I wish I would have brought one for you.
That's nourishing. That can be nutrient dense, full of life-giving minerals.
I love that. I love that you're a fan of organ meats.
Yes, that's very important that we educate the future generation for organ meats to nourish our own organs. They need nourishment.
You kind of alluded to earlier that there is potentially this revolving door between these corporations that are wanting to create the most inexpensive, cheap products possible that they can mark up and sell to consumers, and the government who is keeping raw milk kind of suppressed. Would you agree with that kind of overview?
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. So how have you seen that play out as a raw milk farmer? What opposition have you experienced since you've started producing raw milk?
Well, that's a long journey, a topic by itself. But I'll just go briefly over it. My father started the business back in 2000. He loved to make the products. He loved to milk the cows. And I was still in my 20s. And while we were small, it's not a big deal. We weren't publicizing, we weren't advertising very heavily. It was kind of word of mouth. Time came where we were maybe having too much success in the government's comfort zone. People were coming more and more. The demand was growing.
Were you sending your products out nationwide at this point?
Yes, that's right.
So there was a lot of traction.
Yeah. And there was a couple of times where the government may have gotten some evidence that may have made someone sick or so forth, but they didn't confirm it exactly. It was from our farm. They said it could have been. And they made a story out of that, and it went public and trying to make us look bad and so forth.
Did that affect your customer base at all? Were people kind of unsure after that happened, or were people still very supportive and wanting to buy your products? Because I think a lot of people don't really trust what the government says. So even if they had come out with that story, I mean, I personally would not be deterred by that. So I'm just curious what you experienced.
Yeah, interesting point. 10 or 12 years ago, I don't have the exact date or year, but I was getting phone calls on a Friday afternoon that the phone was ringing off the hook. The media was calling us and say that we may have, it's out there that we someone may have died and so forth. And I don't forget this. I was like, this is Friday evening. And I was like, wow, what's going on? Will we be in business by Monday? And it went all over the media that how bad our farm is. And then, I just didn't know what Monday's going to bring with itself.
What year was that?
I'm guessing in 2016.
Okay. And what did you feel in that moment? Were you terrified for the future? Were you kind of like, okay, we'll see what happens. Hopefully this will pass. Or did it feel just like all consuming?
It was very suppressing. We were thinking and hoping we were doing the right thing. And all of a sudden, did we really kill someone? I don't want to be someone. It's in my heart ever to do any of that. So it was very a strange feeling. But the encouraging part of all this is Monday came and we had maybe one customer call to cancel her order.
Wow.
So it tells us how we, the people, are helping each other and support each other. And if we did fail to do something that was maybe incorrectly done, and we all gather together and we want to do better if it was a mistake on our end. But the importance of we, the people, standing together is it with God on our side can be very encouraging.
Did you ever get to the bottom of what actually happened there with what they were reporting?
I mean, they may have detected some listeria in our products. I'm not going to deny that. But the... thank God we had another chance. And the point I want to make out is that listeria is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It can be in your house. And there again, if you don't have any good bacteria in your gut, then you do consume listeria, it will take over and do a lot of harm.
Which is interesting because one of the main ways that people can populate their gut with good bacteria is by consuming these raw dairy products like raw milk and especially kefir. But if you're not doing that and then you consume listeria, it can be problematic.
Yes, indeed.
And I know in Europe, they are a lot more loose with the listeria stuff and regulatory stuff with listeria. So it's more prevalent in their food because they're not coming down on it as harshly. A lot of raw lettuce can have listeria. So I know milk often gets demonized, but it's really in a lot of other places. And so that's probably another reason why it would be very, very difficult for the government to even pinpoint how this individual ended up getting sick.
Correct. That's right. Then, of course, we had even FDA never came after us regarding that, but USDA did show up. And USDA regulates meat. FDA regulates dairy. We're not quite sure why FDA didn't show up, but I think it was because they saw the demand of raw dairy and these mama wanted to feed their children the best they possibly could, and they were well-educated of getting grass-fed raw dairy. They have been after farmers before that, and I think they found out the more that they go after raw dairy, it's just like the more people found out what is raw milk, what is raw dairy, and the benefits of it. So it's just that they just kind of stepped back. But then USDA, which is regulates meat, came in and said that we should get a license for our meat sales, and which we were very hesitant to do that because I don't want to condemn government. We need government to a certain degree.
But not too much of it.
That's right. The good thing the Bible teaches us, the government is there to uphold the good and suppress the evil. And in this case, we are concerned that they were suppressing the good.
Yeah, I saw videos of, I think it was a USDA raid of your farm where people are coming into your stock rooms and confiscating things. It looked kind of surreal when I was watching it. Like, is this really happening to this Amish farm where these government employees are coming in and confiscating these amazing foods that you are offering?
The interesting point is that USDA never took any meat off the farm. They've tagged it and so forth. But when meat, the food got confiscated, it was when after USDA, we had come to an agreement where we would do things a certain way so we can distribute meat again. But then the local government came in, Pennsylvania Department of Ag, and they regulate both. And so they were not happy that we could continue doing the raw dairy. So they came in and then they shut us down for, told us to get out of the building so they could sample things. And we were out of the building for about six hours or so while they were taking tests and so forth. And then they did take food for sampling and so forth. But
what did they find? Did they ever share the results with you?
They did take the samples and so forth, but because we were not in the building, Robert Barnes took on the case. This was when we had the USDA issue. But because we were not in the building, they didn't allow anybody to be in there. You should be allowed to be in the building or evaluate or acknowledge or see what for samples they're taking and how they're taking it. And because nobody was allowed in the building, the tests that they took, if they were good or bad, were not valid because we weren't there to acknowledge it, how they took the samples. So they never held any water in court because we were all told to go out of the building.
So they could have, in theory, brought their own stuff in, tested that, or, you know, put some bacteria in the products and then sampled them because no one was there to observe what they were doing.
Well, we don't know what they would. We want to trust them as much as we can, but the main point is that
they didn't handle it the right way.
Yeah, that's correct. We weren't there up to observe it. What I want to bring to the attention here is that the biggest problem that the government had is we did not get a license to do these things.
Why didn't you get a license?
If we get a license, that means the rules and regulations did not allow for cream, butter, sour cream. You could not do those raw. You had to pasteurize those.
Why do they allow raw milk, but not raw cream, butter, everything else?
Probably because it's less processing. The more processing that you put in there, the more it's exposed to possibly their bacteria they think could cause harm.
Mm.
That's what it's just a rule that they made in Pennsylvania. And when we went to court, the judge said, the government said, this isn't fair that this farmer has to follow the rules, regulations, and this one doesn't. It doesn't look fair at all, which it probably doesn't. But it's a matter of choice. What I like to have a distinction is that if you want to sell in the stores, sell to the public in large quantities, feel free to get the rules and regulations and apply for that and sell to the stores. But in our opinion, we're not interested in that. And that means, does that mean we can do whatever we want or be as sloppy as we want? No, we still have to perform in order to have a good product. So just because we don't get a license doesn't mean we can be sloppy. If you want to stay in business and have a good product, you have to work for that. And then, of course, the consumer has to decide if you're doing a good job or not. We were put in a position that I can still remember to this day. Usually after the day they were there, and it happened probably 8 times where they came in and just said, no, you cannot do this. No, you cannot do that. I remember a couple times when I just had to walk around the farm and ask God for guidance on this. Am I really doing something wrong? Should I continue? And I knew the importance of having healthy children, making sure they get good food, so they can live a happy, healthy life like God created. And when I made the circle around the farm, I knew I had to commit myself to stand on my 2 feet and just do what we can. And God didn't intervene. The most difficult time that we had is when I have a lovely wife, and she's done very good being supportive. Probably the biggest challenge that she had, and it was mine, of course, as well, is when the day came where we got a ruling that we have to come in front of a judge because we didn't want to pay our fines. So the option that they had is they pulled us into court to get permission from the judge to put my wife's name on the citation so they can collect their fines by selling the farm so they can collect their funds. And this was probably the The thing that I remember, my wife said, let's just give in. It was just more than she could take, and it was very hard for us as well. She mentioned to me, we've worked so hard to get this food to the members. For 20 years, we paid off the farm, and why would we give in to what the government wants rather than losing our farm? The thing that I want to bring to the point here is that the importance of we the people standing together strong with God in our side. I want to bring that, the importance of that, because that's basically why we are able to continuing doing the raw dairy as we are as of today, is because what happened is Rebel News came and did a little story. It went to Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson took it further, and this put a lot of pressure on the government, the USDA government, that was trying to get us to comply. And through all that is that they called the farm after a week or two after that took place and said, we will not go to the court. We'll drop the fines way down. Our workers are getting public threats.
Wow. And so they kind of let up, and they dropped the fines to a point that was reasonable. Did you end up then paying those smaller fines?
That's when we also found Robert Barnes. Of course, this was all God working within. He came and intervened. And
that's your lawyer.
That's our lawyer. And he came to a settlement way beyond what they were asking for. And we did give in to a little bit. We did start processing our animals off the farm at another location. Therefore, we were able to continue selling beef and pork and other things.
What was that like for you? Because as an Amish person, my understanding is that the Amish don't really stand up against the government. Was that something that you had support in within your community, or were people in your community kind of upset with you as well for what you were doing?
That's a difficult question to answer. We don't want to be an eyesore in the public. It was difficult. Our community was a little bit divided on that because we don't like to be exposed to the public. But on the other hand, the other percentage knew the importance of having families connected to the farm, and we were losing out on that because it was very difficult to make a living off the farm. But as everything was said and done, we came to an agreement, and therefore the community is very supportive of what we're doing at the moment.
You mentioned that it was not only a struggle for you, but also a struggle for your wife at the time when the government was coming after you guys and wanting to fine you an exorbitant amount of money for the farm that you had both worked so hard at creating and establishing. What was it like for her and for your relationship when you were under that kind of pressure? And I know you're still happily married now, and I'm just curious what that struggle and that tension was like and kind of how you made it through that hard time.
Yeah, it was very challenging. It was not an easy thing, but the thing I want to bring to the surface here is that forgiving and forgetting to help us find a solution. And I just can't thank God enough for intervening here, and the importance of like my wife, she forgave me, and she still wanted. We communicated about the things, and it meant we're just grateful that we're here to learn and forgive of each other and move on in a positive way.
Yeah. And it sounds like God intervened at just the right time with...
He sure did.
...Tucker, you know, bringing more public attention to it and then finding your lawyer. He kind of put these pieces in place to allow you to continue doing what you're doing, which is helping so many people, including our family. So I'm very grateful for the stand that you took, and I'm sure that wasn't an easy time at all. And it takes a lot of courage to be in that position and to handle that sort of opposition from really all angles. But I'm really grateful that you did and that you came out victorious.
Thank you.
What does an average day of eating look like for you?
You mean what we consume?
Yeah, like for breakfast, lunch, dinner, what are some of your just everyday meals?
I like my eggs in the morning.
How many eggs do you eat?
Sometimes four.
Wow. It's good.
It's and there again, if the chickens are out on grass, you can feel the extra nice flavored eggs.
Yeah, we get eggs from you guys actually. Okay. We go through quite a few.
Yeah, and the other thing is liverwurst and scrapple. Scrapple is a mixture of some flour, a grain, ground flour, and there again you can hide the organs, the liver. There's liverwurst, heart. You can mix in there, which makes a lovely breakfast and nourishing.
Mm. Do you eat liver every day?
I don't. I should more often, but the Weston A. Price recommends at least once a week having a good meal of liver.
You mentioned earlier a little bit about using every part of the animal. That's something that I feel strongly about also. And that's why in a lot of our skincare products, we use tallow from grass-fed cows. Do the Amish use tallow at all for cooking or for like personal care products or anything?
We do mostly cooking with lard. That's kind of how the grandmothers, lard was a big thing. Tallow is not quite as widely known, but we like to eat lots of fat on our steaks.
Yeah.
But there is
tasty.
There is natural remedies that we have a couple companies in the Amish community that actually make salves from beef tallow. That's well widely known there.
Cool. Well, you'll have to compare ours to the ones that the Amish make. I brought you a few to try today.
Thank you.
So you can take them home and see what you think.
Thank you.
I want to hear a little bit more about what sorts of products the Amish people use. You mentioned that you make some salves, but in terms of like personal hygiene, soap, body lotions, toothpaste, deodorant. What are kind of the standard products that every Amish person uses?
Good question. I usually say we don't have everything perfect in our community. We're just one step behind the English, if I may announce it that way.
Or ahead, because like we were talking about earlier, I think a lot of people that I know at least are wanting to get more back towards kind of what the Amish people were doing, not necessarily becoming Amish, but adopting some of these principles that have been forgotten in our society.
The interesting point is that we like to be connected. Our community loves to be involved in agriculture. There's lots of young families that would love to be on the farms. But one thing we are taught is most of the, I would say 99% of the families do make their own clothes. They have their own gardens. And the less processed food you have, the more you rely on home gardening, home cooking, clothes making, leaves less room for being exposed to chemicals and preservatives and so forth. So we like to make our own, have our own gardens, have our own cooked meals. I'm not going to say we don't end up in a restaurant every now and then, especially when traveling, but there's not a lot of that going into the Amish community.
Have you ever had fast food?
Yes, too much.
You have? Okay, what did you get? What
That's
did you
been
try?
Years ago before I was being well-educated.
Did it make you feel bad? Did you notice right away?
I did not know. It's not that bad. But I would be cautious in not having it on a regular basis, of course.
What about packaged foods? Are there any packaged foods that you've ever tried or liked or disliked?
Yeah, I mean, you'll find that probably too much in the Amish community. We do have stores there. The temptation is big. We talked about being one step ahead or behind. So we do have these temptations of having packaged foods. But there again, we're just being educated like everybody else. It's the more you can stay connected to the ground, the more you can process make your own foods. There's less exposure to preservatives.
You mentioned vaccines earlier, and as I understand it, the Amish don't vaccinate, or are there any vaccines that people in the Amish community do?
I'm not going to say the Amish never vaccinated. Just like I said, we're one step behind or ahead, whatever you want to call that. There's some families that did vaccinate. Just like everything else, we're finding out, especially over the COVID, that it's something that we do not want to get involved in. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not going to say that there's some Amish families that still might vaccinate. We're being educated just like everybody else.
I think there may be some moms in our community who are curious if Amish children aren't vaccinated, how prevalent are these childhood diseases like chicken pox or measles? Do you see any of that in your community, and how are they? How are those childhood diseases treated?
Yeah, I was raised and had some measles and was exposed to that. And
yeah, I know even when I was a kid, things have changed so much. I know the vaccine schedule has increased dramatically since I was young. And chickenpox was something that was very normal when I was a child. And parents would even, when one kid had chickenpox, they would bring all the other children around to expose them so that we could develop immunity. And now I'm pretty sure kids are even being vaccinated for that at a very early age. So I'm sure that there are some of these things like measles also that maybe aren't quite as terrifying as we've been led to believe.
That's right. I mean, you will have your days of when your immune response can be weak and you don't want to get horrified. It can be just like everything else. You go through trials, tribulations. But at the end of the day, it can make you stronger if you believe and trust in God. And it's the same for the bodies. Sometimes they go to stress times, some type of bacteria, some type of measles come in, and sometimes it can make the body stronger at the end of the day. So just because you're getting measles, you don't want to say no, it cannot happen. It's just God's way of making your body stronger. So you want to do what you can. Get God's food, take care of his creation, and good sauerkraut, feed the good bacteria. And if you have a measles for a day or two, it'll go away. You don't want to refrain it from coming, putting antibiotics or anything like that in there. You just feed the good bacteria, and then whoever is a majority in the gut will win at the end of the day. So you don't have to panic when you get the cold or something like that. It's just a way of building immunity. I had one customer that called a couple years ago, and she said, if you have a child that has a measles, I want to know it. I want to bring my child up there so they can get natural immune to that.
Wow. Yeah, get those titers naturally. That's a really cool way of putting it. What do the Amish do for the common cold or the flu? Are there any natural remedies that the Amish implement with these common sicknesses that we all experience?
There's a lot of varieties. I was grown up with usually vitamin C can be things, but we're being educated just like everybody else. There's herbs. There's one thing that I'm kind of sold on is eating garlic.
Mm.
We just have to educate ourselves. Rather than going to the store to getting this special food that says it's for the cold or something like that, just go back out to the garden. What can I grow this year that would build immunity? There's lots of good herbs. You don't have to buy it in a bottle.
You can just consume the herb itself.
That's right. When you eat garlic, make sure everybody has some of that itself, so you don't have to be the black sheep in the kitchen when you have smell from eating garlic.
Right. Yeah. Have everyone do it together.
Yes.
How do you consume it? Do you like mince it, chop it up, and then just kind of down it? Or do you mix it with anything?
That's a very good point. I was wondering what am I going to eat when I'm traveling to California? So on Saturday evening, a couple of days before we started our travel, I went to the cooler, got some sheep yogurt, goat Greek yogurt, got some garlic, minced it up, colostrum, oranges, apples, lots of things that I put in and blended into a smoothie, and I bought about 8 quarts of that along to eat on my way.
Oh, that's awesome. Sounds like the perfect immune defense smoothie.
Yes, that's right. So you can prepare things like that in a natural way where you can build immunity and live a healthy life.
I love that. When's the last time you were sick?
I don't remember.
Wow.
Probably the time when the government came in and raided my farm.
Yeah, I would be too.
I do sometimes get a little bit of a runny nose, but it's been a while, and I'm on the education path just like everybody else. Is you learn and you live, and you see what you can do to get good nutrition, good herbs throughout the year, and you can hopefully we can all live a healthy, happy life.
You briefly mentioned COVID earlier. I'm curious, how did COVID impact the Amish community?
Interesting question. We were taken back by it, of course. You don't know what the head is. So we, as a group, decided not to have church services. I think it was, we skipped once or twice out of respect, because you never know what God has in plan or what the future of that is. So we did, out of respect, we did not have church services for maybe a month or so, out of respect to the maybe for our own good. If it would have happened again, the resistance would have got more than it would have been the first time. So I was glad that our elders decided not to do that, because sometimes it can gain respect for each other.
You were glad that they decided not to shut down completely?
Well, I'm not holding against them. In your nature, you can think, why did we ever shut down?
Mm. I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yes, there was a lot of, but our community decided that they will, and I don't regret that they did. But if they would have done it, if it would happen again, the outcome, the decision would have probably been quite a bit different.
How long did you shut down for?
You mean as far as
church services?
I'm guessing about 2 to 4 weeks that we did not have church services.
And then you were kind of back up and running like normal, pretty much.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that was the original mandate, was 2 weeks. And then that turned into a month, 2 months, and then kind of this indefinite thing. And I think by the end of it, a lot of people were pretty fed up with it, especially the mask rules in public, the social distancing. Did the Amish community implement any of that?
Well, of course, if we went out to the public, to the stores or something like that, of course, we try to respect that. But as far as in our one-room public schools, I can't recall that we did.
And the Amish community was not really impacted by the sickness itself, as I understand it, at least very little compared to the rest of the population. Is that right?
That's true. I'm not going to say that nobody died from that, but I think it was
minimal.
Yeah.
Yeah. In general, I've just seen so much information circulating about how the Amish have such lower rates of sickness and disease compared to the general population. What do you think are the main reasons that the Amish seem to do so much better health-wise than pretty much everyone else in America?
My thinking is because they're living off their own garden, living off the land rather than depending on preservative commercial foods is what I'm thinking.
Mm. I think about technology also. That's another area where a lot of people are realizing the harmful effects of technology, not only on the mind and the spirit, but also on the body through these EMFs and the blue light. What do the Amish believe about technology, and what is and isn't allowed in terms of technology use?
Yeah, that's a very broad question. There has been over the years lots. I must say we're human. Some people think we should have more technology. Some things we should not. So there's probably 100 different, I should say, types of Amish. And there has been many divisions over the years because the line of technology, accepting technology, has been pushed. But as a rule, we discourage technology because it gets you to involve the things that can lead you the wrong direction. Although we have the evil spirit that wants to take over, and we have to ask for God's guidance, God's Holy Spirit to work within us. So we're humans just like everybody else. Our battles are still here. Just because you're Amish does not mean you don't have things to work through, just in a different way.
I was thinking about that exact point a lot as I was preparing for today, because it seems like the Amish community has removed a lot of the temptations that the rest of us are exposed to on a daily basis that can lead to temptation and sin. And I'm thinking about things like the internet and social media, which can lead to jealousy and laziness and materialism. And, you know, Amish dress also guards against materialism and lust. And the Bible says, if your eye causes you to sin, cut it out. And that's obviously figurative, but the Amish community really lives life in a way that safeguards against so many things that can lead to sin and destruction. But at the same time, we know that the devil is sneaky and he's the master of deception. And even with these protections in place, the Amish community, like you said, is still made up of human beings. And I'm sure that there are still struggles and sin that exist within the Amish community. In your opinion, what are some of the biggest struggles and temptations that the Amish community faces?
Interesting. Technology is probably one of the bigger ones.
So there's still the temptation to use technology as an Amish person?
It can be, yes. Especially the times that we are in. And this is another thing that I have a passion for, is to getting the children back on the farm. And our forefathers saw this as well. The more that you can be connected to the soil. And this is the reason that my grandfather took the stand. And it's one reason that myself wanted to take the stand, because the importance of having the children on the farm, having them occupied.
Yeah, they're not dealing with that, like, idle boredom then that can kind of lead them astray. And instead, they're creating a sense of responsibility and self-worth and connection to creation, which I think is how God intended us to live, and not so disconnected from nature.
That's correct. Being our community is not involved in much farming as it used to be. They do work outside, do a lot of carpentry work. They get into positions where the companies that they get lumber from, then the lumber company says, yeah, the more you can stay connected with the farm, the better. And that has been my goal, and our forefathers, is to keep the families on the farm. It's a great way to live.
Kind of keeps you on track.
Yes, indeed.
Do you know anyone that has autism or cancer?
Yes.
Many people?
One child in our community that has autism. Cancer is a problem in our community, yes. And like I said, we are exposed to packaged foods way too much.
I think about light also. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the Amish are not using artificial light in your homes, in workplaces, at least not to the extent that most people are. Would you say that's accurate?
There again, modernism is taking over. There are some communities that do not have the artificial light. We do have some artificial light in our community, but that varies from community to community.
I think that's another thing that a lot of people are kind of recognizing the risks of, because we're blasting ourselves with artificial light on, you know, with indoor LED lighting, with screens, and it's totally dysregulating people's natural circadian rhythms. And so people are having trouble sleeping, trouble with insomnia, and it really messes with hormones too. So yeah, I just kept thinking about all the things that the Amish are doing that we've moved away from in modern society, that a lot of people are kind of like recognizing as not being the best, and are trending more towards, I would say, like the Amish way of living. Maybe not all the way. I mean, definitely not all the way, but like I was mentioning earlier, a lot of people are wanting to move out of the cities and start homesteads now. You guys have been doing a lot right all of these years.
Yeah, maybe the English can be lead us in the right direction in some of those ways while we're going astray.
What do you think is the biggest misconception that people have about the Amish?
I'm not sure that I can answer that. We're human.
Well, just something that maybe people have a certain perception of the Amish way of life that you've seen or been aware of that just isn't accurate.
Well, I'm kind of wondering. The opposite direction is that they think we're living a plain life, held back and so forth. And I'm kind of wondering, we're kind of going astray on that perspective. But as far as that, I'm kind of lost in that point of view.
You're saying that people think that your way of life is maybe
simple,
too simple.
And it's not quite as simple, as far as we have more technology than people realize that we have.
Okay. And I've heard that people even, that phones are even becoming a little bit more common. Is that something that people are kind of hiding, or is it becoming more accepted to have devices?
If the more that they're more out involved in the carpentry, out working outside of the Amish community, the temptation is bigger. So it is a problem.
Have you seen that with anyone that you know who has gotten a device and that you've seen kind of a change in them after that has happened?
Oh, yes. Yes. Too many.
Really?
But I'm speaking for our community. There's lots of communities that are still saying no to that. So like I said, there's probably hundreds of different strains of Amish community, and there's lots of good example out there. So we need to follow those good examples.
What I love about everything you've said is that it does seem like the sense of community is really strong, and that for the most part within each Amish community, it seems like there's a really deep sense of connection and purpose. Would you agree with that?
Correct.
How are elderly people viewed within the Amish community? Because in our society, a lot of times the elderly they're put in homes and they're maybe not invested in as much as I feel like they should be. But what does that look like in the Amish community?
Well, we're still strong that we need to take care of our elderly.
Yeah, I mean, and you're an example of that. You've brought your father with you on this trip across country, which is super cool.
Right. We're making special memories.
Yeah.
I've learned a lot from my father over the years, and this is another special moment that I have with him. I won't say it's not ever, never going to happen. That never happened. They didn't go to the home, but our rule of thumb is that we need to take care of them. The children take care of them, take their turn like once a week or go do their laundry. That's very important in our community.
I love that. Well, Amos, thank you so much for being here. It's been so cool being able to talk to you and meet you in person after consuming your products and having them in our household for so long. So I really appreciate you making the time. Where can people learn more about you, support you, and also buy products from your farm?
They're more than welcome to come visit the farm. We'll make sure they get what they need.
And that's a good sign. If a farmer is inviting you to visit the farm, that means they're not hiding anything and they're legit. So that's an amazing offer. What about people who live like in California or Arizona? How can people buy your products right now if they're not close enough to visit the farm?
They can call the farm. We try to have staff available to answer their calls. We do have someone in Florida that has created a website for your convenience. If you want to purchase our products, she has a website created. And what she does is she faxes us the order. Then we fulfill that and we send it either on a refrigerated truck. We put it in a styrofoam box with ice packs and send it with FedEx or UPS. We just want to make sure that everyone gets the nutrient-dense foods they have to feed, nourish their bodies so the temple of God can live within them. That's our goal.
I love it. Well, it's certainly made a difference for me and my family, so I appreciate what you're doing. Thank you.
Welcome.